Okay, my name is Chelsea Carnes. Today is March
24th.
I'm here to conduct an interview for the Samuel Proctor Oral History Program. And today with me is...
June Littler.
Mm-hmm.
My main name is Davis.
Okay. So to start out, June, could you just talk a little bit about your childhood, where you grew up, what year you were born?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I was born in 1932. It was the depths of the Depression. Apparently, 1932, the fewest number of children were born that year than the ones around it. I was born in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, where my parents were also born. And my father worked for the telephone company. We ended up living in a little town called Clark Summit, about 25 miles away from Wilkes-Barre. It was right outside of Scranton. And my mother was, they had met while they were both working for the telephone company in Kingston. And when we went to Clark Summit, she would occasionally work part-time in some of the outlying towns while new telephone company people went on vacation. She was a telephone operator. You know, they plugged things in the wall back in those days. And anyway, I was active in Brownies. She was a Brownie leader. And then World War II came, and my father was called. He was working for the, he was part of the National Guard. And in February of 1941, he was called to active duty. That was 10 months before Pearl Harbor. Mm. And... when I found that out many years later, I thought, my goodness, because, anyway, World War II disrupted my life completely, and I ended up going to three different schools for fourth grade, and then in fifth grade, I was sent to a Lutheran girls' school in Philadelphia. It was called Lankanoff School for Girls, and it was actually the best education I ever got in my life. And after World War II, my mother drove, no, I think it was in the middle of World War II, because I was in seventh grade, and we had a 1940 DeSoto car that my father had just gotten before the war, and he was very proud of it. But my mother and I drove to California. Would you believe? And it was, that part of the way was on old Route 66. Mm. And we drove to California. She sold the car to some friends. Anyway, I spent 3 months, no, maybe it was 2 months, at John Muir Elementary School in San Francisco. And then we went and spent some time in Lakeport, where there was a this big lake, and Coast Guard airplanes would come in to land on the lake when San Francisco was fogged in. And she worked at it was a building that they were harvesting hops for beer. She was a hoistman. Mm. And later that fall, she went to work for... the railroad in Dunsmuir, while I went to live with a family in Sacramento. And later at Christmas time, we moved back to, when she worked for the railroad company, she was a telegraph operator. Mm. And then we moved back to Lakeport, and so the next 3 months of seventh grade was there. And then in April, it was getting toward the end of the war, and we knew it. And we hopped on a train and went back to Pennsylvania. And I went back to the school where I had been and finished up seventh grade there. And then eighth grade the next year. And then she had gone to a... Cornell University for a hotel management course, and she had done an internship in Miami, and then she her plan was to go to Las Vegas because there were hotels out there, and she was going to get a job there. She got out there in probably April or May while I was still in eighth grade, and but she couldn't get a job at the hotels. So she ended up getting another clerical job at a place that was called the Basic Magnesium Plant. There was a town there that had came into existence during the war because there was magnesium mines around, and this plant was manufacturing the ore to whatever they needed for the war effort. And so my great aunt and I flew out after the end of school of eighth grade, and but we came in at night, and I never could see the ground, so how to, you know, see Las Vegas from the top, up in the air. But when we landed at the Air Force Base, because there was no local airport, and when we came in at the, between, it was Fremont Street and Fifth Avenue, Fifth Street, Fremont and Fifth, there were four gas stations on all four corners. I thought that was rather remarkable. But then Henderson, where we ended up, was about 10 miles away. And I ended up going to ninth grade there. And meanwhile, my parents had been sort of estranged, and they ended up getting a divorce. And my mother subsequently married an Air Force man who was at Nellis Air Force Base. He was very nice. He was he was funny and kind. And anyway, but that was okay. The end of the war, and I let's say I went to college at San Bernardino Valley Union Junior College is what it was called. And I was going to go into nursing, and came home at Christmas time, and at a New Year's Eve dance, I met a fella from Boulder City. And I had known of him before, but I never met him. And a week later back at San Bernardino, I saw him on campus, and we were both registered there, going to school. Anyway, by June we were married. And but by June, let's see, actually, Korea had started that previous summer, and in 1950. And so he was part of the Naval Reserve. But when he went on maneuvers, he got seasick. So we were at school there for another 9 months, and he ended up enlisting in the Air Force because Korea was busy. Anyway, we ended up, he went to basic training at Lackland in Texas. And we ended up for his first duty really at Champaign, Urbana, Illinois at Chanute Air Force Base. And he was doing some of the early stuff on computers. They were wiring boards. So that was the early part. Mm-hmm. And our first son was born there. And that was in 1952. And in 1954, we were at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio, and our second son was born there. And he got out of, when his enlistment was up in 1956, we were, okay, that was in February. And so we stayed there for a while, but he was looking to see where he was going to go to college. And we ended up in Florida because he wanted to go to architecture school. And our neighbor they were from Tampa, and they were talking about picnics on the beach at Christmas time, and we just couldn't imagine that because we were from the desert at the time. So that's how I got to Gainesville. Mm-hmm. Subsequently, in 62, we divorced, and I was going to college. I had transferred some hours, 42 hours, and but I ended up having to change my major because dietetics weren't, because by that time I was in dietetics, mm-hmm. and they didn't have that curriculum here. So I changed to education social studies because mm-hmm. I was always interested in, even though I didn't start out that way, my mother had me distributing political flyers when I was about 16, mm-hmm. and for someone who was running for office. And she was also a member of the Business and Professional Women, and the group there had, there were several women's groups. Four of us in the summer between sophomore and junior year were sponsored a girl to go to Girl State that was being run by the American Legion Auxiliary. Mm-hmm. And so I had a good experience in Reno that summer. So when fall came, and in my junior year, of course we'd be all fired up with voting, you know, and because we had all held various positions, and the position I had was a sheriff of a county, and so. We huddled together one day, you know, we ought to run somebody for class president. And they said, well, what about Marsha? Marsha said, no. And, well, Joan, no, I don't want to do it. And Lucille said, not me. Let's run June. Mm-hmm. And I said, what? And I had difficulty during World War II. I stuttered. And I wasn't particularly anxious to get up in front of a group and speak. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I said, okay, because I really didn't think it was going to happen. But anyway, the boys put up two guys. And so, of course, the boys' vote was split. All the girls voted for me, and I won. So I ended up being the first class president that was a girl mm-hmm. in that high school. And so that was my beginning of this. Now, many years later, I found in my mother's papers that when she was a senior in high school, she had run for class president, and it was a very large high school. And she lost, according to this clipping from the school paper, mm-hmm. she lost by 3 votes. Uh-huh. And so I've always been very aware that voting was very important, because mm-hmm. if you couldn't get because, you know, you were sick or something, or you had a flat tire, you know, that one vote could change it, as we've seen in other ways. Mm-hmm. So when I got here to Gainesville and was doing, and I was divorced and I was going to school and I finished up and, I had been part of the student group for equal rights. And we were picketing in 1963 because there were restaurants that wouldn't serve blacks. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it would be embarrassing when people from India were denied service too. And, you know, it was all very stupid. And, of course, I had come from other places where we didn't have this trouble. Mm-hmm. And then there were water fountains that said right next to each other, same manufacturer, one said white and one said color. Mm-hmm. And there were two at the foot of the stairs at the old Sears on South Main Street. And I would let my children drink out of the colored water fountain. And one time I pick one up, you know, and you were drinking out of that one. And they were too late, and it was right next to the stairway to the second floor, and two little old ladies were coming down, and they went, oh, when they saw that. Mm-hmm. And as I told other people before, I felt a certain amount of satisfaction in that. And the student group ended up 2 weeks after Kennedy was killed in Ocala at a demonstration. There was an integrated picket line. Mm-hmm. And I was part of it. And only the white pickets were arrested and none of the black pickets. You know, clear-cut case of discrimination right there. But I gave my fingerprints to the city. And I called my friend who was babysitting my children, because I was going to go down in the morning, come back in the afternoon, and another group was going to go down in the afternoon. And I told her that I was going to be a little delayed. And she said, well, that's all right. Don't worry about it. So then there were 12 of us, and they didn't have that much room in the city jail anyway. So they took us all over to the brand new county jail. There were 6 women and 6 men. And they took our fingerprints twice again, once for the county, once for the FBI. Mm-hmm. And years later, I got my, you know, Freedom of Information Act. I had to get my fingerprints taken again, pay $10, and send it off. Mm-hmm. And so when I got it back, of course, there's a lot of stuff marked out. But anyway, so I called her. So we were there until about 6:30. No, it wasn't 6:30. We had something to eat about, it must have been about 5 o'clock, and there were baked beans, and there was hamburger, and there was collard greens, and instant coffee. Anyway, when we got out, we finally got bailed out, and we went over to the church where we had started out, and so I had to call my friend again. And I said, oh, I've been a little delayed. She said, June, have you been part of that trouble down there? And I said, yes. And she said, well, don't worry about it. So, because my kids were playing with her kids, you know, a bunch of boys. Anyway, so I got in line, and here was this lovely fried chicken, you know, and something else. And then there were beans. I said, hold the beans. And she said, you must have been to jail. And I said, how can you tell? And she said, nobody who's been to jail wants beans. So anyway, that's there was a big rally and everything and so forth and so on. But I've told this story, I think, on another oral history interview, so maybe I shouldn't have even brought it up because it's redundant now. But anyway, after I graduated and the teaching jobs, see, when I decided to do this, the counseling department did not tell me that social science was an overcrowded field. They just wanted to get me through, I guess. And there wasn't anything in Alachua County. I didn't want to leave Alachua County. And I got an offer from Newport Richey and also Winter Park. Or maybe it was Winter Haven. But anyway, so I ended up, I went back to the job center or whatever it was, and there was a position open in Bronson as a librarian. Mm-hmm. Even though I didn't have library credentials, I could still take that if I would take a library science course at the University of Florida, which at that time they did have a cataloging course. the hardest one to start with. Anyway, so I did that, and I was a librarian at Bronson for a year, and that paid off my the year that I went to. I had a year scholarship. It was $400, and so that got paid off. I didn't have to give cash, and then I worked for the public library for a year, and then Santa Fe came, and I ended up starting there on July 1st, 1967, and about a year later, AAUW had a state convention here in town, and then I saw the public relate PR on it, and I said to myself, well, that is something my mother would want me to do, because education was very important to her, and I had sort of maybe disappointed her because she died in 1958, mm-hmm. and so she never saw me graduate. Mm-hmm. And she had a sister that was 2 years older than she, and her sister graduated. Her sister never married, but and then my mother got married and didn't tell her mother for a year, and so finally she confessed. Her mother was devastated. Because she, because then my mother ended up dropping out. She only had 1 year of college. Mm. And as time went on, she said, doesn't matter what you know, it only matters how many letters you have after your name. And so, because she was one of the smartest people I knew, she did crossword puzzles and she knew an awful lot. And she could play the piano by ear, but she wasn't real great, but she had a good time. Mm-hmm. And so in essence, I did it for my mother. Mm-hmm. Well, they drafted me as secretary or something first year I was there. That's what we always do. Mm-hmm. And then later on, I did the newsletter. Now, this was back in the days when you used stencils.
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever used a stencil?
I have for projects.
Yeah. And then, so, because when you make a mistake, you have to put this fluid on it so that you can correct it. And I want you to know that was a lot of work. And time went on, and then I've had practically every position on the board, except I've never had program, and I've deliberately stayed away from it. As a matter of fact, I stayed away from membership too for a long time. I got that several years ago, and so my friend Charlotte Yates, because she was a member of AAUW, and she became my best friend. She was about 18 years older than I, 15 to 18, something like that. And she was a great pal, and she died in about 2002. And but anyway, she's a great role model for me, and I have a picture of her, because she didn't drive, but she could make stuff happen. And this picture is of her sitting in an armchair. The telephone is on the end table. There's a box of Kleenex. You can see the telephone book and the Gainesville Sun. And let's see, what else was there? Well, that was about all she needed. A pen and pencil, you know, and something to write on. And she drove a whole bunch of activities just from that.
With those tools.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so over the years then, it's been a struggle for the group, because we're all getting older and it's more difficult to get younger people in because they're all so busy doing other things. And I mean, and it's important things to get along with their career, because you have to keep body and soul together, and a lot of them are working. And even when, as a young mother, if you're not working and you have a bunch of kids, it's not real easy to, you know, do something for yourself or for the organization. And but it is, the organization as a whole has done so much. And the statistic that impressed me a lot was that they had given Marie Curie the equivalent of an ounce of plutonium or what it, radium, for her to work on her research. And that was a big deal. Mm-hmm. That was a big deal.
I read about that.
Yeah. And so we just haven't done a real good job of promoting that, I guess. Mm-hmm. And because I have an inferiority complex anyway, and the fact that I stuttered in the old days, it's taken, my light is under a barrel. You know, and so I have been able to make some good activities work. Recently I worked on Move to Amend, and we got it through the city and the county. Mm-hmm. And that's the one saying that we support a constitutional amendment that says that corporations are not people and money is not speech. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I've been supporting Bernie Sanders, who has been a bigger advocate for that. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I will vote for Hillary if she's on the, or when, as my friend would say, when she's on the ballot. And but anyway, it's on principle. I've done a lot of stuff on principle, which I thought, you know, was part of the stuff then during civil rights days. Because I also went into the donut shop's colored entrance one time, and the guy inside, who was white, said, "You could go in the other door." I said, "No, that's all right, that's fine." And bought a dozen donuts just on principle. Mm-hmm. And the funny part about that was there was a sheriff's deputy in the same door with me. Now, probably something had happened earlier, I don't know. But anyway, and that's the story of my life.
Okay, well, I've got some questions.
Uh-huh.
I was wondering, first, if you could describe what the AAUW does and what your experience and exactly what the mission of the group is.
Yeah. Well, when I joined, I did not realize that they were a big fundraising organization, because I hate being asked for money, and I'm a skinflint, and I'm having trouble enough, you know, keeping my own body and soul together. And but they also promote fellowship with your friends, you know, to keep up with things and keep you intellectually stimulated, because after all, you do have a college degree and you shouldn't let it go to waste. Mm-hmm. And you should encourage women and girls to achieve. And but you can't do it without money. Mm-hmm. And so our the Red Stocking Tea that we have in December, that's the one that is our biggest fundraiser. And we send it all to the national organization, which has, I think when you check, you'll find out millions of dollars that they give out to applicants. Then, and they are competitive things. You have to, you know, make a good case for yourself to finally get it. And Judith Resnick, who was on the Challenger, was one of the AAUW recipients.
Astronaut.
Yeah. And in physics. And so locally, people who come to town, you know, who have, it's a good way to meet new people in AAUW. And we all, most of us belong to other organizations too, because I'm also a member of the League of Women Voters. Mm-hmm. You know, this voting thing. You have three votes. And which is also why I'm working on that other thing, for the, even though I don't live in the city. I've also participated in some of the state conventions, and I was a state officer one time, and I got to meet a lot of people from around the state, and so that was kind of nice. So I know people in Miami and Orlando and Jacksonville and Pensacola and Tampa. Mm-hmm. And so that's a good plus. And let's see, have I answered your question? What if, okay, but it is, and down in Venice and south of Sarasota, there are people there who have a lot wealthier than we are up here, and have made larger donations. Mm-hmm. But so if I was rich, I'd be giving money too. But mm-hmm. we raise money.
Yeah, it sounds like it's also it's a very practical tool for raising money.
Yeah.
And money is a very practical
yeah.
Way to educate women, you know, to
mm-hmm.
offer women who
mm-hmm.
couldn't afford higher education,
mm-hmm.
the possibility to do it with funding.
Yeah.
But it also sounds like it's served, all three of the interviews we've done so far, everyone said it served as a way for educated adult women to find community and meet other educated
yes.
adult women
yes.
that they can
yeah.
talk to, and that might lead to other organizing
yeah.
and other
mm-hmm.
groups like League of Women Voters
yeah.
and things like that.
Well, and the other thing too was that the money that they give, especially for postdoctoral stuff or even an advanced degree, it's they want to give enough so they don't have to work
mm-hmm.
while they're doing their studies, and that's a big plus.
Yeah, that's great. Over the years, what year did you say you got involved with AAUW?
72.
So over the years since then, the kind of women's rights movement as a whole has shifted and changed. And
yes, which reminds me that ERA was big
mm-hmm.
in the 70s. And
it's the Equal Rights Movement.
Yes. And so their state meeting was in Daytona Beach. And I was aghast. There was a certain amount of the old guard who was not for it. I couldn't believe it.
Mm.
And there were people lining up to microphones for and against, and I was astounded.
Mm.
It made me feel bad that some women couldn't see what I thought was very clear,
yeah.
you know, and so they did not come out to, as an organization, to endorse it.
Hmm.
But that was then.
Has that changed, do
yeah.
you think, over time?
Uh-huh, yeah.
No.
Uh-huh.
Do you
yeah.
think the organization has gotten more progressive politically?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't been to any of the state conventions in the last 4 or 5 years. And I don't but I think that the Lilly Ledbetter Act, you know,
Equal Pay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's been a big deal, and we did endorse that.
Good.
And so, yeah.
Do you know of how the Gainesville branch is different? Is there anything about the Gainesville branch of the AAUW that makes it stand out or makes it different than the other branches across the nation?
Yeah.
Or do all the groups kind of unite on the same issues?
Well, I think we're pretty ordinary. Yeah, I'm sorry, I don't have any better insight on that.
That's okay.
Let's see what else. And then can you just talk a little bit about how the structure worked and how, like, for instance, I'm interested in, you were talking about a disagreement when the ERA was becoming a big public debate, that there, not every woman agreed. So how did conflict, how did you solve conflict like that? Was there, what is it, democratically through a vote? Was there a cabinet of people who kind of made the decisions, or was it a unanimous thing?
Well, it was... It was a floor vote, if I remember correctly. I don't think it was a... I don't know if they had a paper ballot or not that year. Because most of the time, it's a voice vote. And they have a special voting practice. They have cards. And it's perforated. It's your those are your credentials. And if they have to have a separate ballot, if you can't tell if it's consensus or not, and you really need there's a perforated corner, and it's labeled with A, B, C, or D. It depends on what the issue is, so you know which one it is. But the top part of the card has your name and where you're from and your position, and those are your credentials. So that when you vote, and you know it's in a large hall and everybody's sitting down, you hold up your card, you know, if it's for, and then they ask for against, and then you vote. And you can tell pretty well, it isn't like... who can holler the loudest?
Mm-hmm.
And it if someone asks for a count, you know, if it's that dicey, they'll do that. But I guess those other perforated ballot things are when something isn't on the agenda, and it does come up, and you have to do it that way. Because that's the only organization I've been connected with that does that. It was a little maybe cumbersome, I thought, at first, but it actually works okay.
Mm.
I mean, better than caucuses. And, you know, I didn't realize how bad caucuses were, because so many people don't get there.
Mm.
And it's only the diehard people that get out, or who can get out, and it's at an ungodly hour, too. I mean, it isn't all day.
Mm.
It's only a couple hours. People are working.
Mm. Do you identify as an activist and as a feminist?
I'm an activist. I suppose I'm a feminist, but I don't wear blazing colors and say I'm a feminist, you know. Because I'm, which is one of the reasons, because otherwise I'd be pulling for Hillary. But I like to see the broad picture and take the best part of what it is. I don't care who it is.
So you don't toe a party line?
No.
You use your judgment.
Yes, that's right. I'm a flaming middle of the rotor person.
Okay.
And because I have middle of the road, you pull the people who are falling off the right hand side with you, and then the ones that were over on the left in the ditch, you know. And that's the best way to travel. The greatest good for the greatest number is my philosophy.
Is there anything that we haven't talked about your life or about the AAUW that you'd like to go down in history on our recording here? Could you talk for just a minute about, you mentioned your mother and what an impact she had on you. It sounds like she was a real role model for you.
Yeah.
And it sounds like she was uniquely ambitious and educated.
Yeah. And my mother and I did not get along too well. And it wasn't until years later, because I got to thinking, I don't remember her ever hugging me.
Mm.
And I'm sure she did, but it's not a big thing that I remember. And because my father was the apple of my eye, you know. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's because I was the only child. But the other thing was that when, because this other thing has made a difference in my life too. Both my parents were smokers. And this was in the 30s, you know, and my mother was, I guess, a flapper in the, of the 20s. And smoking was the thing to do, you know. And so they both smoked. Now, so I was a victim of secondhand smoke. And my mother's best friend told me one time, you were thought of as a sickly child. And every time I got sick and I got well, I got sick again. And I've had rheumatic fever, I've had scarlet fever, I've had whooping cough, and whatever else. But when I was about 5, I got a very high fever. And it killed the auditory nerve in my right ear. Mm-hmm. So I am stone deaf in my right ear. Mm-hmm. And that has made a difference, too, because when I go outside, I noticed this morning when I went to pick up the paper, there was a bird singing, and I couldn't tell in which direction he was coming, mm-hmm. you know. And so you see where I'm sitting. That's because the good ear's over here. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I was in my early 40s when I discovered that I'd gone to a luncheon and I chose the southwest corner of the table unconsciously. And I said, I wonder how I should do it. And that's because the person at the far end here, see, I don't like it when someone sits right next to me because, and ever since then I've told them, I don't hear in that ear. If you need to talk to me, I don't answer you. Poke me. And so that's how I've gone through that. But I think it had something to do with the stress of World War II and the fact that I was, I mean, I didn't have an ear test until I was 10 years old when they, you know, they were astounded. God, she can't hear in her right ear. And so, but my mother, I did respect her for the fact that she, you know, was interested in education. She would have liked to have had degrees. Mm-hmm. And she was very upset that some of her ambitions were cut because of that. Mm-hmm. I don't know what she ever wanted to be. She died when she was 50 from bronchial carcinoma. Mm-hmm. That's lung cancer for short. Mm-hmm. I mean, for long. And so, anyway, that's how the ball bounces. Mm-hmm.
Anything else about the AAW or anything else you want to?
I've had some real good friends. Mm-hmm. And
was your husband supportive of your work with the AAW?
Well, we were divorced by
were divorced by then.
And he was out of town.
Did you find it difficult to be a mother and find childcare and also be so actively involved in the community?
Well, by the time, let's see, my oldest son graduated from high school in 1971. Mm-hmm. And that year, his two brothers went to live with his father, with their father. So I was a little bit free and easy at that time. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. So, when I went to jail, and I got home, you know, to my friend, because her children were about the same age as my two boys, to my three boys, they had, I got there and she said, June, are you crazy? And so, but, and the boys kind of remember it as an interesting day because that was on a Saturday, and the next day, well, that was the term. I was a Cub Scout then later. I went to jail, and I was teaching Sunday school. And so when I went to Sunday school the next day, only one person spoke to me.
They didn't know what to say. They were judging you?
Yes. Mm. And so I stayed as a Sunday school teacher until June, just to spite them. And then I quit the church.
Wow, so the church wasn't supportive of you taking that stance?
The minister was okay, but the people were too rednecky.
I see. And what made you risk your social standing and, you know, risk going to jail? What was it about that time and that action that felt worth it?
It was the principle of the thing. And I don't know where I got that. But it took... because I was a Girl Scout, too. So maybe it's from Girl Scouts.
Great. Well, thanks so much talking and doing this interview.
Yeah. Go ahead and turn this thing off. Okay, this is Chelsea and June again. We forgot to talk about one thing, which is June mentioned when I got here that she had been an assistant to Sam Proctor.
Right. I was a student assistant with Sam. I think it was probably the fall of 62 through the spring of 63. And he was working on Florida 100 years ago, and he was reading out of the Tallahassee Democrat and into a machine. It was a dictaphone, and so I used that to transcribe it. And I kept remembering the salt works. down on the Gulf Coast. It was interesting. He was a real sweet guy, and I liked him a lot.
How'd you get that position?
I don't know exactly, because I was on the list for student assistants, and I guess he picked me.
Mm-hmm. Even though you were studying library science?
No. I was education. Social studies. At the time. And before that, I had done some volunteer work for the Young Turks of Gainesville, who were running for city commission. Mm-hmm. And John DeGrove was one of the faculty members who was coordinating things, and I was typing envelopes for them. I was on the day before labels.
Uh-huh. Great. Okay.
Pretty, isn't it?
It's still March 23rd, and I'm still here with June Littler, and now also we have Anne with us. Anne, I forgot your last name.
Haisley.
Anne Haisley. And Anne is going to tell us a story that we left out of her interview that we think is important about this silver platter.
Okay, so back in the 60s and 70s, the Gainesville Sun used to award a silver tray to various organizations in Gainesville that they felt contributed a lot to the community. Mm-hmm. And this tray was given to Gainesville Junior Women's Club. Then the next year they gave one to the Gainesville Junior Welfare League. And the next year the J.C. Wives Auxiliary. And then the Garden Club. And then, in 1971, was our turn, and they gave it to the American Association of University Women. And that was all the space they had left, so I guess they had to make a new design. Anyway, about 10 years ago, we got an email, was it, or a telephone call? A telephone call, I think, from some man, a stranger to us, and...
From Maine?
He lived in Maine, and he said, well, I've got this silver tray that I got at a yard sale or something, and I've been trying to track down the different organizations. I've been trying to call them, and I finally got someone, and it was us. Mm-hmm. And so he said, oh, I'd like to sell you the tray. It used to be yours. So I think you negotiated with him, didn't you? I think it was you. I think it was June Littler that negotiated with him, or at least partially,
yeah.
And talked him into accepting just the cost of the postage to ship the tray to us. And he did. It was very nice. And so the tray arrived, and it was right shortly before our annual Red Stocking tea. So we had pictures in the paper, we had, you know, journalists and photographers there to take pictures, because this was sort of a big deal, you know, finding something after all that while.
Mm-hmm.
And we use it every year, and every other special occasion we bring it out and use it.
Nice.
So,
and we have no idea how it got to me.
Yeah, we don't know. The only thing we can guess is that somebody was storing it, like I'm storing it,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't...
And they died.
They died, and their family just took it with them, took everything with them, and then mm-hmm. decided they didn't want it anymore. But that's never going to happen again, because I have told multiple club members, branch members, exactly where it is, and they know enough to come and get it if I die. Right, June?
Yes. And that's the story of our
yeah.
beautiful tray.
That's yeah. the story of the silver tray. All right, thanks, Anne.